Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
You're listening to What's the Crack, and today I'm interviewing Tony Duffin, the CEO of the Anna Liffey Drug Project in Dublin, Ireland. In today's episode, me and Tony discuss the Anna Liffey Drug Project, their successful lobbying story for supervised injection facilities in Ireland, and we find out what's the crack with their work towards decriminalisation. I hope you enjoy the episode, and remember to follow us on Twitter at WhatTheCrackPod. Tony, could you start by introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about what you do?
Okay, well, I'm Tony Duffin, as you said. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the Anna Liffey Drug Project. I'm based in Dublin, but we have services in Dublin and in the Midwest of Ireland, so based out of Limerick City. The Anna Liffey is a harm reduction service, a low threshold harm reduction service. That's our ethos. But we were established in 1982. We're a charity, an NGO. And we have around 35 staff. We have 35 staff and around the same number of volunteers at any one time. So there's around 70 of us involved. We provide services to around 2,000 people each year. We would provide low threshold, meaning that we have very low expectations of people in terms of accessing our service. So what I mean by that is that we don't have huge criteria, high criteria for entry, and we don't bar anybody from all of our services. So we work with people who are actively addicted, who have complex and multiple needs. And by harm reduction, well, I think it's quite a common term now. It wasn't always, but it is now. We work to ameliorate the difficulties and the problems that people might have associated with their drug use and indeed other parts of their lives. So that's our ethos. In terms of our services, what do we do? Well, we provide fixed site services and outreach services. The fixed site services would be places like our drop-in service in Abbey Street, Middle Abbey Street in Dublin. And access services. It can be the first point of contact for people. So engagement with people is very, very, very important to us and to our work. Maintaining a relationship is the key to, I suppose, positive change in people's lives when they're ready. If there's no relationship, then really it's much harder to help people and to help them make positive choices. So there's a lot of good work going on at the front line. We also work with people who are, you know, not considered to be, problematic drug users. So recreational drug users, we do work, and we would do work welfare services at music festivals like the Electric Picnic. It's an addiction service with a low threshold harm reduction ethos.
Okay, great, thank you. So, Anna Liffey successfully lobbied the Irish government for the implementation of supervised injection facilities. Could you explain what supervised injection facilities actually are?
It's a type of drug consumption room. So, it's a safe space for people to go to inject the drugs that they would have been injecting themselves anyway. The model that we've gone for in Ireland doesn't provide the drugs that people will be injecting. So you can have a situation where people are provided with diamorphine, for example. But in Ireland, what we've gone for in Ireland is the model where, similar to the one in Sydney and in Vancouver and in other jurisdictions, but they're the two that spring to mind, similar to the models there, where people will bring the drugs to the centre, and they will be able to access safe equipment and a safe space, use those drugs, and make sure that they ultimately leave well and alive.
So I'm just curious. We did a podcast last year on supervised injection facilities, and we actually called them drug consumption rooms. Is there a reason why different names are chosen for the same facility?
Yeah, it's the same principle, except that in a drug consumption room, you will almost, I mean, the reason they're described as drug consumption rooms, people will be allowed to not only inject drugs, but to smoke drugs as well and prepare drugs in other ways. In a supervised injection facility, we'll get into why, I suppose get into it now, really. We chose to lobby for a supervised injection facility because, particularly in Dublin, there is a very serious injecting culture. So street-based injecting is all over the city. And when we were lobbying, we were setting out back in 2000 and at the beginning of 2012, it really wasn't on the agenda. And to get it onto the agenda, we felt that to explain to people what we were trying to achieve, we wanted to address the most harmful route of administration, which is injecting. It's not only harmful to the people that are using on the streets, but it's very disconcerting and concerning for everybody involved who might be living or working or in the city centre or visiting the city centre. But also, it's a huge burden on emergency services, like obviously ambulances, but also the Gardaí, the Irish Police Force. Or indeed fire brigades get called out, to overdoses in the streets. So all of that, when you open up a supervised injection facility, what happens is you prevent people going upstream through these kind of pre-hospital emergency care services. You address the issues earlier, keeping them safe and well, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they're a great idea. So this may be more me, but I feel like there's more talk around supervised injection facilities lately, potentially due to the opioid crisis in North America. But you started way back in 2012 lobbying the Irish government. This feels quite ahead of the game, or is that just my perspective?
I remember back in around 2004, I think it was, or maybe 2002. There was a publication in Ireland from the National Advisory Committee on Drugs, and they were looking at harm reduction interventions, and the outcome around drug consumption rooms was that there wasn't enough evidence back then, and it was really kind of boxed off as, we'll have to wait and see what we're going to do. So, I mean, I've been working in this field since 1993. It makes complete sense to me to allow people to take drugs safely. If they, people that were going to take those drugs anyway out in the public domain. What I'm saying is that it's always been there and discussed. But back in 2011, when we were drafting our strategic plan at the Analiffy, we had been to so many, when I say we, I mean our team here, had been to so many funerals over the years of people who had died in the streets or in homeless hostels or in prisons of overdoses or at home or whatever, that we really needed to try and do something. We run a drop-in centre already. We have active drug users, people who use drugs coming in. We don't allow people to take drugs. This is a challenge for anybody who provides a day service or a residential service for people who use drugs. The truth is that you don't allow people to inject on your premises. You don't allow people to take drugs, but they do. And the truth is that the service where you don't have supervised injection facilities or drug consumption rooms, what you end up with is the services on the ground taking up the slack for the lack of proper services. So drop-in services and day services, and homeless services end up having to manage this very difficult situation, when in fact, if you give somewhere safe to go to use drugs, then everybody is safer, not just the person, but the staff and the people who live in the area. So it's a no-brainer for me. When the reason that we went to advocate for supervised injection suites back in 2012 was, as I said, the amount of people that we saw every day who were injecting. And we had a very serious polydrug use problem that had emerged over the years. Heroin has always been a problem in Ireland since the early 80s, and it remains a problem. But now we have a very serious polydrug use problem. And so when we talk about people coming in to inject drugs, we're talking about any drug that they bring in. And obviously the staff would intervene to make sure they were safe if they do overdose. But the point being is, back in 2012, that's what we were looking to achieve. We wanted to set out and go and convince people, I guess, of the evidence that was very strong by this stage, and from Sydney, had a massive amount of data and evidence and research that we could tap into. And so there was great examples at the time. I think there was around 90. Now there's over 100 sites across the globe of types of drug consumption rooms. So we really wanted to achieve that. But back then, it was controversial. Still, it was the idea of it was not going to happen. You know, we were facing an uphill struggle.
Yeah, I can imagine that there's been some backlash. The name supervised injection facility doesn't really sit well, and I've heard some groups trying out different names to make it more palatable for the general public. But back in 2012, how were the general public? Was it initially hard to get people on your side?
I can't say that there was an enormous backlash. In many ways, you know, people trusted the Analiffi. We'd been around for some time, and they trusted what we were saying. So we had to get the evidence together and to convince people. And I have to say, we didn't have many detractors, not many. There were a handful, and they were consistent over the time while we were advocating for the legislation. And they were a particular group of businesses, representative groups, and a handful of Dublin city councillors who didn't want to see this service established. So generally speaking, yes, there was some, you know, when you put things up online through a news site or whatever, you get comments back. There was a mixed bag of comments coming back over the years, but increasingly we started to see the sentiment change. People, as we began to explain the evidence, and I guess that was really important. What we did was we had to make sure we knew our case, that we knew the arguments both for and against, and we did that, and we got position papers together, and we had a legal opinion sought, and we had that done by a barrister that we had instructed, and we got all that information together, and we shared everything, and we spoke to everybody, and we engaged with all our stakeholders that we could identify. We engaged with the media, really engaged with the media. We didn't really have much of a public profile back in 2012. We had engaged on occasion, but we tended to not engage with the media. So in 2014, around February time, we came off the blocks and we started to engage really proactively with and reactively to stories. And then, of course, as I said to you at the beginning of this, we were trying to do something that we'd certainly never done before. It'd never been done before in Ireland, and so we needed help. And we reached out to various stakeholders over the course of the years as we were trying to find a way. Every time we met a hurdle, we had to try and get over a hurdle. But I think the lesson here is about problem solving and reaching out for help and aiming high and being tenacious, sticking with it. It took us 5 years, 3 months and 27 days from the moment we launched our strategic plan on the 20th of January 2012 to when the legislation was enacted. So, you know, you have to stick with it and really believe in what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm interested, mainly because I can't think of any reasons on the spot right now, but what were the arguments against supervised injection facilities? Because you said that people were against it and that you had to prepare counterpoints to those that were against it, but with all this great evidence that it will help the people who use drugs and it will help the services such as the police and the ambulance that are actually overrun, what were the arguments against it?
Okay, so yeah, well, I mean, from my perspective, not much. Okay, the evidence is very strong, but the evidence can be, we all know that evidence can be read differently, and the detractors looked to the evidence and used it differently. So we never said that we would solve all public injecting. Okay, we always talked about reducing public injecting and managing the situation better in the public domain. But that was kind of turned on its head to say, well, it doesn't solve public injecting. Do you know what I mean? So that's the kind of thing you might face. You can't argue with the fact that supervising that drug consumption rooms, there's never been a death in one, even though there's been who knows how many times people have consumed drugs in supervised injection facilities or indeed drug consumption rooms. There's never been a death, so people couldn't argue with that. I suppose people were concerned about, they would say things like that they don't achieve their outcomes, but we were able to bat these things back and explain that we were never we can't solve drugs in society. We simply can't solve it. All we can ever do is manage it better. And supervised injection facilities achieve what they're set up to do. If you want to reduce public injecting, if you want to prevent overdose deaths, if you want to get through people through to treatment and rehabilitation faster than otherwise. So if you want to save taxpayers money, right? Because actually there's plenty of evidence to say that by providing a service like this, you save money elsewhere. For, as I described to you earlier, further up the stream, A&E is a very expensive service to use. Ambulance services are very expensive, policing, etc., etc. So you save money, and there's great evidence of that. But I think there wasn't much. I suppose people would talk about that it wouldn't address drug markets, for example. It wouldn't stop the violence and all this sort of thing, or it doesn't stop people taking drugs. And that's not the purpose of a supervised injection facility. It's a treatment service. It's a health service. It's a service that targets people who are injecting in the public domain, and or want to come in and inject safely. Because actually, you don't have to be just injecting in public. Some people who inject at home actually want to come down because there's no one back at home, and they might be frightened of overdose or whatever, so they might come in. But the point being is that they achieve what they're set up to do, but detractors tend to look for other issues that they're not established to address. I suppose the other thing is that people, so some people simply don't like the idea. It's a more of a moralistic approach, argument, and you cannot, my experience is that you can't change some people's minds when they morally disagree with allowing people to take drugs safely. That's a real difficult one to change people's minds on.
Yeah, absolutely. That is interesting. Okay, so moving on, you have also mentioned that you're now working towards decriminalisation in Ireland. Because the word decriminalisation is slightly confusing, because we generally work in a dichotomy of prohibition or legalization, and decriminalization doesn't really sit on either of these camps. Could you start by briefly explaining what decriminalization is and why you think it's the right choice for Ireland?
Sure. Well, I suppose firstly to say that yeah, we've already talked about language around supervised injection facilities, but here we are, and it's probably important to talk about language again. Decriminalization does confuse people. It for many people, people don't always think about drug policy, right? It's a specialist area, and when you hear decriminalisation, for many people it sounds like legalisation. But it's not legalization, and it's obviously not prohibition. And in many ways, we're trying to avoid, you know, not avoid using the term, because it, but I suppose try not to use it because it confuses people. So we're talking about a health-led response to the possession of drugs for personal use. It's more wordy, but that's what it is. It's the idea that people would not be criminalized for being in possession of small amounts of drugs, because the evidence is that it's counterproductive. I guess Portugal is the one that's always is the country that's always shown as a good example, and it's bandied around a lot. But genuinely, it is a good example. Since 2001, they've had decriminalisation there, and they've had some amazing outcomes. But I guess I'll come back to that in a second. it's the idea, certainly in the Portuguese model, the police aren't looking to arrest people for drug possession. They're looking for drug dealers, and that's what they're interested in. If people come to the attention of the police and for other behaviour and are found to have drugs on them, then the drugs possession is dealt with by going to a dissuasion committee. And the criminal behaviour, or the alleged criminal behaviour, let's say a fight or stealing or whatever it might be, is dealt with through the courts. So it's pushing the two apart and saying possession is more of an administrative thing, right? They give out a small fine and offer health interventions. And their experience is fantastic. I mean, they've seen, you know, small increases in reported on illicit drug use amongst adults, reduction in illicit drug use amongst adolescents since 2003. They've had a reduced burden of drug offenders on the criminal justice system. They've a reduction in the prevalence of injecting drug use. They've got a reduction in opiate-related deaths and infectious diseases. And indeed, just on the overdose deaths in Portugal, they had 40 deaths in 2015, and they have 10.36 million people, right? And in Ireland, in the same year, we had 348 overdose deaths, and yet we only have 4.67 million people. So we have less than half their number, but we have hundreds more overdose deaths.
I was thinking as well, in Portugal, before they decriminalised, they had high rates of heroin use and opioid use and overdose, which from what you've been saying is similar to Ireland's situation right now. Does decriminalisation fit more with Ireland because of what we've seen with Portugal? Is it a more fitting solution for this issue at hand?
Yeah, well, I think decriminalisation is part of the way of managing the situation. As I said to you, I've always said solution. It's not a solution. Managing the situation better. They had 100,000 in Portugal. They had 100,000 heroin users around 2000, and now they have around 50,000. So they've half the number of people in their population that are using heroin. And part of that is to do with things like, you know, the reduced stigma of drug users, people being able to come forward and not feeling like a criminal to get help. So they've had a lot of positive outcomes. They don't have drug consumption rooms there. They've had legislation for it for some time, but they are getting them soon. They're about to establish them, drug consumption rooms. And actually, it's interesting because, as I said, in 2015 they had 40 overdose deaths, but in 2016 they had 27 overdose deaths. So they were coming down. And they're still not happy, and they're introducing the drug consumption rooms because they're as part of a measure to get those deaths down even further. It's fantastic. Like, I mean, it really values human life. So that's great. It's not that decriminalisation in itself is a silver bullet. It's part of that idea of managing the situation better, as I said. You do need, health services and social services and housing and all those things to be in place. Now, I can't think of any jurisdiction that doesn't have deficits in all those areas, right? Portugal has deficits in those areas too. But I do. So Ireland has, you know, job schemes, health services, social services, addiction treatment services. We have all those things. But what we don't do is have a health-led response to the possession of drugs for personal use. And I think that is going to have a huge impact on our population, on keeping people alive and well and getting them through to treatment and rehabilitation and other healthier choices sooner. One of the things about decriminalisation, I suppose it's important to mention, is that it's not all about problematic drug users. It equally applies to people who are recreational drug users. I was in the Dissuasion Committee in Lisbon. I went up there. It's shameful enough to have to come up to the Dissuasion Committee. It's inconvenient, and you have to be assessed by somebody who will decide whether you have a problem or non-problematic drug use. And, you know, it is a dissuasion, because actually the 100, of the people that go to Dissuasion Committee in Lisbon, only 15% reappear in front of them, which is a fantastic outcome in terms of recidivism, you know. I'll give you a quick quote from Charles Haughey, a former Taoiseach, Prime Minister of Ireland, and he said, "We have had to recognise that very often people committing these offences are not guilty of criminal activity in the normal sense, but perhaps are people who require medical care and attention rather than punishment."
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This was back before when they were considering the Misuse of Drugs Act. The Misuse of Drugs Act, in the last 41 years, we've seen our overdose deaths increase. We've seen drugs become more available. They're more potent than ever before. We've got people, there was a statistic mentioned the other day in Ireland where 70% of people who are going into our prisons have an addiction-related issue. If you were back in 1971 and said to the community, listen, we're going to implement this policy and we're going to see more harm and more death and more drugs, what do you think? I think they would have said, go back and think again. So we need to do something about it. And the thing we need to do is to have a health-led response to the possession of drugs for personal use. Because for me, as a harm reductionist, somebody who's worked in the field for 25 years, one of the key things here is destigmatizing people so that they can come forward when they're ready to seek help. Or indeed, they don't even have to come forward to a service. They can ask their friends and family for help much more easily. You know, so that's going to make a huge difference.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are some drawbacks with decriminalisation, such as the fact that the black market still exists. I was wondering, why decriminalisation for Ireland? Why not further and potentially regulate?
Okay, I think legalisation, the regulation and control of all drugs to be used amongst the population would be a quantum leap for Ireland. And I don't even think that it would be very complicated. It would take a long time. And I think that actually, if you like, the low-hanging fruit here is the idea of decriminalisation of drugs, whereby it is within the gift of the Irish government to decide how we respond to the possession of drugs for personal use. When I was in Portugal recently, I was talking to people who implement their policy there. And, you know, some people have said to me, decriminalisation is just a stepping stone to legalisation. You want people to be able to take more drugs. That isn't the truth. I'm a harm reductionist. You know, it's not what I'm about. But it is. When I asked them in Portugal, I said, you know, what's the story here? What's the next step? And there is no next step. They are happy with their model. Okay, they are happy with the outcomes of what they're delivering, of their overdose deaths coming down, of people not going to prison for simple possession, not getting criminal records and messing up their lives later when they can't get a job or can't travel internationally. You know, so it is considered over there from the people I spoke with to be working, to be effective, and I think that we can achieve that in Ireland sooner rather than later, and I think that's why we're going for the health-led response to decriminalisation piece.
Perfect, thank you. And what is Ireland's aim with decriminalisation? For example, with supervised injection facilities, you had a timeline of 5 years. Is this similar with decriminalisation? When do you hope that it will come into fruition?
Yeah, so when we wrote our the Anna Liffey strategic plan for the next 3 years, we put in that we would like to see, you know, a health-led response for the possession of small amounts of drugs by 2022. And our work is to engage with the public and inform them of what it is when we talk about decriminalisation and some of these confusing terms, and what a health-led response to the possession of drugs is and what it will mean for people. So we're doing what we did before, which is really the model of reaching out for help when we need it, speaking to the media, both the social media and traditional media, getting the evidence together, as I mentioned before, and just engaging with people. So we're really looking forward to it.
Great, and I thank you for your work with Anna Liffey. I think that is a very positive note to end on, so we'll end here. But is there anything else you would like to add or plug?
No, I'll take the opportunity to ask people to visit saferfromharm.ie. We're calling this our campaign Safer From Harm, and the hashtag Safer From Harm is being used across social media. So if people are interested, I'd encourage them to follow that hashtag or to visit saferfromharm.ie. We have a newsletter we're going to be sending out to people. They can sign up to it there. So I hope that's not too opportunistic. It's just something I'd like to get people to engage with. Thank you.
And that was the interview with Tony Duffin. I hope you enjoyed and weren't too disappointed with the lack of an Irish accent. Check out Anna Liffey online, follow them on Twitter, and follow us on Twitter while you're at it. See you next time.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code Program.